Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Good to have you all with us here. I remind you, listen to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA, and support for WEAA is provided by California Table Grapes, offering grapes from California at ShopRite. We're going to jump into a little local roundtable with two of guests who appear on the show often. Dr. Lawrence Brown's in the studio, political activist, public health consultant, assistant professor of public health policy in the School of Community Health and Policy here at Morgan State University. And appreciate you coming in at the last second, Lawrence.
Howdy.
Howdy. Coming in from the west. And from the east side, we have Hassan Giordano, host of the Reporters Roundtable, publisher of DMVDaily.com. Hassan, how are you?
I'm just right.
All right. We've got a howdy and a just right. And y'all can join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook page. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. The councilman just left, Carl Stokes, talking about this $30 million or more that could be missing. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts? I know you have a thought on that, Hassan.
Absolutely. You know, I find it very interesting, and kudos to the councilman. There's only really a handful of people in the city council that seem to be having at least some interest in the interest of the citizens that elected them. I mean, let's be honest. I can count on one hand how many people are actually doing stuff that helps local residents. The rest of them just seem to be proxy votes for the mayor. And it's just becoming ridiculous. This is an administration, the Rawlings Blake administration, came in under the cloak of transparency. Yet, step after step, they have kind of revoke that thought when people, I mean, even last year when the councilman Stokes put in the resolution calling for and then became a charter amendment calling for the biannual audits of all 55 departments and agencies, the administration bucked that. The council and the eight members or nine members of the council that support the mayor no matter what happens buck that. But then now they want to turn around and act like, well, audits are necessary. Well, why would you buck a bill last year that called for audits of all of them? So I think that, you know, this is probably one of the most egregious forms of gross negligence that I've seen from a local government. And we just seem to kind of bypass it, Mark. We talk about this week after week. There's something else that's coming up. Last time was $100,000 being taken from $400,000 sitting there that could go to scholarships for children to be paid for a prosecutor. Where is this money going? We need to open up these books. But I would hasten to say, and a lot of department heads, former and current, have said, if you open up the books to these departments, it's going to cause for even a bigger mess because half of the books aren't even given properly. So any auditor that actually comes in would see what a fiscal mess this city is
in. When we did the audit shows early, when that became an issue, it was clear that people said that in the departments, that many departments aren't prepared for an audit. They don't have records kept. They don't exist.
Right.
So that's very true. But how much transparency do we need? I mean, when you think of transparency, Lawrence Brown, I mean, how deep should transparency go? Is there no time for closed doors for governments to people in government and other places to kind of wrestle with things before they became public?
You know, I think there should be as much accountability as possible. But I think we have to keep in mind that when you have a strong mayor system, you set up a situation where you have an inordinate amount of power in the hands of one person. So regardless of who's there, whether it's O'Malley, Dixon, or Rawlings Blake, what you set up is a situation where you support or you sort of really give – a lot of leeway for everything from cronyism to nepotism to the sort of backroom deals and shady deal making that takes place in our city government. And I think Councilman Stokes is doing a fantastic job, you know, consistently. I agree that, you know, he's one of the only ones that's really stepping up to the plate and calling to task, whether it's the TIFs or pilots or whether it's here with the auditing, that these are things that the residents of this city needs, especially when we're giving out all of these tax breaks to corporate developers and we're giving these sort of tax collection breaks to commercial developers and we're closing rec centers, closing fire stations that, you know, the decisions that we need to make about our money, we can't even really address when we don't know what's really in our coffers. And so that's something that we really have to get a real handle on. And we haven't really started except for this whole piece right here yet.
I mean, I'd be curious to see where this goes. I mean, and if what this audit says and who does it and how thorough it is and how deep it is, we just don't know. I mean, I think that's part of the problem we're facing. I'm curious what our listeners think at 410-319-8888. When you read about these audits, I mean, and you think about your water bills and you think about in the Baltimore City area, in Baltimore City proper, the tax bills, one of the things that Carl Stokes was saying on the way out, the last comments he had about that was that, you know, if you get a property tax bill and you pay less than you owe because they made a mistake, they're going to come back at you and ask you for the rest of it mm-hmm. the next time when they figure it out. Mm-hmm. But they're not doing it in this case when it comes to these commercial properties, which could yield to a lot more money.
Absolutely. And it seems like almost a backward way of government. It's the people who elect these individuals to represent their interests, but the people who are elected are representing the interests of special interests before they are of the people who put them in office. And we seem to – and I blame a part of this on us because we seem to have these issues over and over. This is nothing new. We keep going through this, the Steiner Show, the Anthony McCarthy. It seems like every week we're talking about something else that's went on in local government, yet it gets a 24 to 48-hour lifespan. Then we're on to the next. And yet, time after time, we keep putting the same people in office that keep making these same mistakes. I just don't get it.
Well, people don't vote in Baltimore City.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. People do vote.
What were the percentage of people who voted in the last election?
Well, 23%.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
They voted.
So if people are not for whatever reasons mm-hmm. are not involved in the process, then you know, I mean, whether it's an outside influence that kind of pushes City Hall through demonstrations, shut down sit-ins, whatever people do, but if that's not coupled in the local government with some kind of push, people are just not. Are really disengaged, it seems.
Well, you know, people are really disengaged, I believe, because they believe the system is broken. I think people believe no matter who, they probably believe the game is rigged. And I go back to The Wire and David Simon's thesis on that show, the game is rigged. And I believe that's what a lot of voters in this city believe, that, you know, the deck is stacked against them, that there's so much corruption and cronyism that no matter who, you know, you step up to plate to vote for, that they're already in the pocket of a corporate developer. They're already in the pocket of a commercial business owner. And so it calls attention to me just how deep the cynicism runs in Baltimore City. It's just how jaded I believe people are because there's so much lack of trust and because there's this perception that there is no way of holding corrupt people accountable for the actions that they've done.
And speaking of inaction, I mean, I look less on the inaction of a voter who, I mean, let's go. Typically, a voter 9 to 5 is worried about going to work, paying bills, putting food on the table, raising children, but more of the inaction of these people who are elected by the citizens to actually do a job. Look at city council. I said in the beginning of the program, there's only a handful of people, and I know all three of us can name 5 or 6 of the current 15 members down in City Hall who are actually doing something on a regular basis. You look at their voting record, I would say eliminate half of them. Make it 6 districts represented by one person citywide. Get rid of the fat. I'm telling you, because if you eliminate 8 council people just by their salaries alone, that's almost $500,000. Then you talk about salaries, staffers, and others. We're saving over $1 million for people who really aren't doing anything.
But the whole idea to have more have single member districts. I remember when the campaign first started here in Baltimore and was defeated a couple times before it was victorious. Was the smaller the district, the more interactive the council person could be with the citizens and vice versa.
Right.
That was part of the argument of giving people a chance to really have.
Which is why my solution would be a council manager form of government. Take away all of this power that we're giving to the mayor. Put more power in the hands of representatives, because the way it's set up now, corporate developers and commercial business owners, they can just put money into the coffers of the mayor, whoever they may be, and they will control the government of this city. And we've got to find a way to fracture the power of special interests so that the people do have more power in the representatives they do elect, whether it's 6 or 15.
So how would that work?
Well, you have to change the charter. Part of that change, the first change should be reducing the Board of Estimates from the five members, two of them controlled by the mayor, meaning the mayor goes in with three votes automatically to get anything, reducing that down to possibly the three elected officials being of that. So that way, at least you have some form of accountability with these three elected individuals. But all of that, when he's talking about, has to come through charter amendments. Because this is written into the Baltimore City's charter, it's up to the voters in order to do it. The only two ways you can do that is, one, have the city council pass it with a supermajority vote, which we know is not going to happen, or you go to the voters and get the signatures that are required in order to put it on the ballot. A little bit more tougher to do, but I think it's necessary and possible, especially right now with the cynicism that's going on in the city of Baltimore.
What do you all think? 410-319. Yep, we just lost the caller. She was there, but they disappeared. Maybe somebody's on the phone. Try again. 410-319-8888. Try to get you to Ellen, and we'll see if we get the rest of them in. They're coming back. As soon as we get you, we'll come bring you right back in. Who knows what happens in the world of telephones. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So try to join us or write to me at steinershow@gmail.com. I can check that out, and I'll look on Facebook. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. I mean, go ahead.
What you are seeing politically, and of course, as Mr. Politics, I always look at things politically. When you see a dynamic that's playing out right now between, as the councilman said, this audit has really to do with the comptroller. Like you said, there's no love lost there. And so when you look at the upcoming elections, now, of course, Joan Pratt, you have Doug Gansler about to come on. She is looked to be as the top on the short list of being his
one
lieutenant
of the top
governor.
Three. Right.
Right. So even if she doesn't become that lieutenant governor, but tells Doug, I'm going to carry Baltimore for you. Now, we know the mayor, Stephanie Rawlins Blake, is already in Brown's camp. If Gansler ends up winning, and Joan now becomes victorious because of that, she seems to be the front runner to run against Stephanie Rawlins Blake as mayor in 2016. And because the primaries are now in April, it's going to need a well-funded, possibly incumbent in order to challenge somebody, because you're campaigning through the wintertime. You're not going door knocking. So you're going to need a lot of money for, you know, direct mail and television and radio. And so without the absence of Sheila Dixon not running, that could set up a Joan Pratt versus Stephanie Rawlins Blake in 2016, which we've seen playing out in the past 2 or 3 years.
That's an interesting thought. But then again, I mean, why wouldn't this be, it's not to get into politics too deeply here, why wouldn't that just be another Catherine Pugh race? In other words, if there's no kind of organization that really can build around to push a candidate or an idea, then sitting mayors and sitting council members in this city have the power to just stay in office forever. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because that's what I'm saying. Without the participation, without people saying, without it going to being 50% of the voters voting, 53%, 60%, if it's down to 20, 23% of the voters, it doesn't change.
But Catherine Pugh was never elected citywide. Joan Pratt probably has more name recognition than anybody except Sheila Dixon citywide at this point. She's run time and time again citywide as comptroller. So her name is a lot more recognized on the ballot than a Catherine Pugh. So being that incumbent factor, knowing that people already have that name, she's more likely to build that infrastructure in order to take on a Stephanie Rawlins Blake incumbency, as opposed to even a Carl Stokes, who's only really been elected in districts beyond the citywide name recognition. So I think of anybody besides Sheila Dixon, again, if Sheila does not get in the race, that would set up a very good potential. Now, if Sheila is and she does it, then we also have the potential for a Martin O'Malley 1999 election where Bill Cole can jump in the race and possibly split the black vote in order to get up there. So it's a lot of dynamics that play. 2016 is a long way away, but based off the gubernatorial and what we see setting up right now, this could be a possible, you know, 3 years out sparring match.
Mr. Politics.
Yeah.
Hassan, Mr. Politics, Giordano. Yeah, I don't think Bill Cole would run against Stephanie Rawlins Blake, though.
You know, I do want to return to the point that a lot, you know, I don't think we really understand, the average voter doesn't really understand, like, how this all works. When we talk about corporate developers, when we talk about commercial property owners, when we talk about the way taxes are assessed, when we talk about the way that tax funds or revenues are allocated, you know, this is fairly complicated stuff. It's not stuff that is taught in our high schools, and we know the quality of our school system, unfortunately, is not very good. So when you think about, you know, these issues that we're talking about, I don't believe that people have done a good enough job in terms of explaining just how this affects the pocketbooks of everyday citizens. And I think there has to be a real push for education, both in our school system and beyond and outside of our school system, because these issues are very critical, but it takes a lot of explaining and educating to really so that people can really understand what's going on. I mean, I have a PhD, and it takes, you know, I've had to study up on this thing. You know, it isn't just something that comes naturally. You know, you have to really understand. And again, I think The Wire is a great resource when you look at how developers in that show are connected to public officials, and the game that's being run and how it rolls downhill, you know, is very illuminating.
One of the things that struck me when you just said about developers, and by the way, folks, the phones are now rolling, so you can join us here, 410-319-8888. Calls can come through, 410-319-8888. Join us with your thoughts. On the front page of the Baltimore Sun this morning, there was an article about the casino that was being built, supposed to bring all this money to Baltimore, that was being built on a floodplain. And so they wanted it there so badly, apparently, they hired a company for $30,000 to have the definition of floodplain changed. And the folks in planning were going, huh? What are you doing? This is a floodplain. If it floods, it floods. How can you allow this to be built? But that just came out today, that was, again, this kind of interaction.
Right.
That goes beyond the case. It's not so much legal corruption, because it's not legal corruption. It's in some ways the corruption of power. Who knows who? Who can make a phone call? Who can get things done?
Mm-hmm. And that's influence. It really is. And I, like Professor was saying, a lot of people just don't really get it, and they don't have time to get it. I mean, case in point, my mother reads everything I write. She read about this tax stuff
just
that
your
went
mother.
On. Right, exactly. So how couldn't she, right? And so she's listening. I'm guarantee she's listening right now to the show. So, but this tax, the increase in the water bills that I wrote about, and, yeah. You know, 42% over 3 years, people were like, huh? They really didn't get it until she got her water bill. And it went from $104 on a usual basis to $349 in one cycle. And she was like, oh, whoa, like, where did this come from? And, you know, my mother doesn't make an extraordinary amount of money. She makes the money based off of the bills she has to pay. She doesn't have extra income to be. But that's how a lot of our voters are getting educated, by getting walloped upside the head when they get the new tax bill, the new BG&E or water bill. And that is the problem. We don't have these advocacy groups anymore to be out there educating, because the funds have dried up from philanthropic organizations who used to give money to the Acorns and others who were out there educating the voters on housing issues, water issues, and others.
One of the reasons that we want to get rid of Acorn is because
just that reason.
Just that reason. And though Acorn did contribute to its own demise by some, I think, the bad internal management on top of that, but in this city especially, they made some huge mistakes that allowed themselves to be pilloried, but people wanted to pillory them anyhow, because they were just doing just that. They were organizing and teaching people what was really going on that could have made a difference.
But I do think Hassan is right. You know, the ultimate blame does fall on us. You know, whether we vote or don't vote, we do need to take the time to become educated on these issues. Like, we don't have a choice. Either if we want a better tomorrow, we're going to have to take the time that it takes to educate ourselves properly, to understand what's really going on, and then critically analyze and make informed decisions and become engaged. You know, go beyond voting. Get involved in political campaigns. Get involved in independent organizing. Get involved in changing the system. You know, don't just sit back. You know, this is not everything we're saying is not, I think, a cause to sit down and to roll over. It's a cause for standing up and pushing forward. And I think that's what we have to do. You know, the future is not determined. We make the future that we want. And so I think that's what we have to do, is get up and make that future that we would like to see.
It'd be interesting to see how what you're describing. What's this? Oh, here comes we did get a text here. Let's get this and see what this says real fast before we run out of time completely. I can get to the top of this page, which I cannot. Why is that happening to me? 410-319-8880. I can't get up there. So education. I don't hear her speaking up for the citizens of Baltimore. Where is she and her department? Is she really that honorable? I think they're talking about Joan Pratt? Okay, I couldn't see. Couldn't move my computer. So they're saying that they're questioning whether or not the question of the contracting and others, whether Joan Pratt and her department were that honorable to start with, writes in Dave in Baltimore.
Well, I think anybody you ask, I think Joan has a long, distinguished history of public service in the city. But I think even the council would say that they want her to try to do more with the audits. She has the power to do these audits. Her office, I would say, probably would tell you that it's a struggle right now getting the proper resources from the mayor's office in order to do these audits. And so there's a power struggle, but she can be doing more, I would think, based off of the powers and the finances she currently has.
So this is what they wrote. I just got up. I'm sorry. Why hasn't Joan Pratt spoken up before more? I have heard numerous cases where it seemed she should have been on top of the situation, i.e. funds disappearing in the Department of Education, questions of contracting, and I don't hear her speaking up for the citizens of Baltimore. Where is she in her department? Is she really that honorable? And I think I remember that she on this program, when we did a program on the audits, was saying they don't have enough auditors on staff to do it. On the other hand, I have had people who are involved in auditing say the exact opposite, that if you have whatever – I forget what the number was now that she has in the office. But that's more than enough to assign – to kind of really delve into it. You could organize that in a better way to make it happen. So that debate did take place between whether or not she has enough auditors and how we use the auditors that we do have. So all that. So I want to thank both of you for joining us. It's always good to see you. I appreciate Hassan. Always good to have you in the studio and all the stuff you're writing and bringing things up that nobody else does here in our city as a political commentator in our town. Hassan Giordano, you don't miss his work on the Reporters Roundtable and DMVDaily.com, and we link to that on thesteinershow.org so you don't miss Hassan's words.
Much appreciated, sir.
And Dr. Lawrence Brown, political activist in a wide range of issues facing this community, and a public health consultant, also assistant professor of public health in the School of Community Health and Policy here at Morgan State University. Good to have you in the studio as well.
Always a pleasure.
We're going to take a very brief break. When we come back, we do our annual look at what's in this week's our weekly look at what's in this week's city paper. Stay with us. We'll be right back.